Welcome once again to the American Churchman Podcast. I'm your host, John Harris. The American Churchman Podcast is brought to you by TruthScript, and it is dedicated to inspiring Christian men to embrace their divine calling. We explore a range of topics. My co-host is Matthew Pearson. How you doing, Matthew?
I'm doing good, John. And I was going to ask how you're doing, but you're sounding a little sick. So sorry to hear that, but my environment's also a little bit different. I'm outside in nature right now because my apartment's Wi-Fi is not working, but I'm blessed to have some wonderful friends here who are letting me use their back porch.
Is that because of the hurricane?
Nope, nothing to do with hurricane. Our Wi-Fi router is just being stupid and we need to call someone about it. So my roommate and I will probably do something about that soon. But so now I'm here in this lovely environment. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know you and David did the podcast last week and I appreciate David doing that with you. So you probably already talked about the hurricane, but last time I talked to you, there was a hurricane approaching and
yes,
it was the second hurricane and you're alive. So thank God for that.
I'm right here. Yes. It was in Tampa for that. So that was a blast. That was fun.
I saw you cleaning up with guys from, I think the Old Glory Club chapter that you're in, like chopping up branches and things like that. And, that looked, you know, I just remember when blizzards come through, that's the closest approximation for me in New York. My brothers and I would go around the neighborhood and just see who needed help with getting a tree out of the way or something like that. Yeah, that's really cool though. I took note of that. I was like, that's great that there are people cooperating and helping each other. That neighborliness, we need to cultivate and keep that. So yeah, Ultra says he's back. Our favorite Presby is back. Yeah, you were going to get more than sprinkled in this shower. But it doesn't seem like it was as bad. It was, what did it go down to, like a category 3?
Yeah, it made impact as a category 3, which for a while they had been saying that was going to happen. But there was like the day of it, there was a report that would be a category 4, which is pretty terrifying, but it got down to a category 3. Nevertheless, it was still pretty destructive to good parts of town. But funny enough, my parents have a condo in Treasure Island and that got hit harder by somehow that got hurt harder by Helene than it did Milton. So beats me, but yeah, hurricanes are weird, but it's a part of life living in Florida, growing up in Florida. So it's just how it is, but yeah. It's wild.
Yeah. I know Florida, I found out this years ago, has the most tornadoes per square mile than any other state, which kind of shocked me because I associate tornadoes with Kansas and Nebraska and Texas and Oklahoma. And
I've never seen one here. I hope I don't ever see one, but we had quite a lot with Milton. So,
oh, I'm sure you did. Well, anyway, yeah, I am sick. I am going to be relying on Matthew a little bit here. My mind is foggy. My wife actually had this like 2 weeks ago, I think. I think it's the same one. And she was just kind of like no energy, headache, couldn't really think. It's kind of weird. I am stuffed up, but it's like it seems like it taxes my mental energy more than anything else. But I was away over the weekend. I don't know if you saw pictures on X and stuff, but I was with a bunch of guys, William Wolfe, Andrew Isker, Tim Bushon put on this conference. Joseph Spurgeon was there. Rod Martin was there. And it was a great time. But I drove all the way out there to Indiana and drove back. And Tim and I were actually doing some recording in a recording studio, too. So it was a long trip for me. It was like a 3-day thing or four days of being in Indiana. And then, yeah, I guess 5 days total with the travel. I was fighting it the entire time. I was like taking DayQuil and I was throwing everything I had at it, but it caught up with me and it's like right after the conference. So, anyway, I appreciate your prayers because I have a lot going on the next few weeks. And, Matthew, have you gotten a chance, speaking of a lot going on, have you seen the David Platt thing at all?
I mean, I've seen him. He's going to like some new, country or whatever. I saw a few tweets about it, but I've not kept up with it. No.
Oh, no. Okay. So maybe you're not aware. There's a documentary out. It's in two parts. The first part was released Sunday night.
Okay.
And it's all over social media. I would encourage people to go check it out. TheRealDavidPlatt.com. You might find it interesting, but it seems awfully interesting that David Platt has this trip coinciding with the release of this. I don't know if that's was on purpose or what, but check it out. And we're gonna persevere though. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today. We have it actually, the topic is not, we don't have like multiple topics, but the topic itself, I think I could talk for probably 2 hours straight, which I won't do just because there's been so much controversy over this. But we're going to get into whether or not, quote unquote, Christian nationalism is woke right, or, you know, is it the same thing as wokeness, i.e. social justice 2020, BLM, CRT, all of that? Is it the same thing except for people who are more on the right politically? So I've done a little bit of content with CJ Engel about this already, but we'll talk about it some more today and get Matthew's thoughts on this. First, though, we have an attribute of God to discuss. We're going to be talking about the infinity of God, and I'll just throw it to you, Matthew. What is the infinity of God?
Yeah, certainly. So for this topic, I usually go to a bunch of different texts to kind of get something going. But right now, the majority of my presentation will be from Bavinck on this topic. So if you ever hear me say something and it sounds very familiar, it is not at all original. It is probably just plagiarized from Herman Bavinck. So, and he's a very wise guy, very smart guy. So I do not feel bad about doing that at all. But before we even begin to get into what divine infinity is, we're going to read five verses from Psalm 147. So this is the word of the Lord. Praise ye the Lord, for it is good to sing praises unto our God, for it is pleasant and praise is comely. The Lord doth build up Jerusalem. He gathereth together the outcasts of Israel. He healeth the broken in heart and bindeth up their wounds. He telleth the number of the stars. He calleth them all by their names. Great is our Lord and of great power. His understanding is infinite. So notice that last word of our psalm, from which I chose to do it from the King James. But notice the last word. His understanding is infinite. The way in which we would define divine infinity in like just very simple, straightforward terms is basically this. God is not limited by anything finite or creaturely. Basically, it's talking about how God is limitless. There is nothing by which he is bound to, nothing which actually limits him. God is, he's infinite. So infinity as an attribute is a positive concept. God's infinity, there are various ways in which we can speak of it. It's not just infinity is this and no more. They're based off the circumstance in which we're speaking of infinity. It can have various implications. So many different uses depending on the context. So for example, if one means that God cannot be confined by time, then his infinity would coincide with his eternity. So if we want to speak about God's eternity or God's infinity in relation to time, we would refer to his eternity. If one wants to speak of how God is not confined by space, then we would speak about his infinity in relation to his omnipresence. If we want to speak about infinity in relation to the fact that God is unlimited in his virtues, and that in him every virtue is present in an absolute degree, we would speak about God's perfection. So infinity is just a very multifaceted attribute in that based off the circumstance in which we're speaking of it, you can refer to various other attributes as well. Because remember our lesson on simplicity, all that is in God is God. Some important things to know about divine infinity as well. Divine infinity is not referring to an infinity of magnitude. So like for when I say magnitude, I mean like people may speak of boundless dimensions of the spatial universe. So it's not referring to an infinity of magnitude because God is incorporeal and without extension. He doesn't take up space. So it's not saying, oh, God takes up all the space in the world. No, God is without a body. Of course, God, according to his divine nature. Divine infinity is also not referring to an infinity of number, God being the smallest or the largest, because this would contradict the fact that God is not an infinity of number because he is one. God is simple. So we went over divine oneness and divine simplicity. Divine infinity instead would refer to an infinity of essence, or in other words, we would basically say God is infinite in his characteristic essence, absolutely perfect, infinite in intensive, qualitative, and positive sense. So by virtue, that's a very confusing topic, but God's very own essence cannot be bounded. He is pure perfection in that nothing limits him. The only thing by which God is actually limited by, if we were to say God is limited by anything, is he can't contradict himself, and that's it. So that was a lot. It's a lot to get through, but that in a nutshell is the infinity of God.
Yeah, that was excellent. So this encompasses more than just, because I was thinking with infinity, you're thinking of like his eternality. And it's more than that. It's, mm-hmm. You know what, the thing that I know confuses children sometimes, and then atheists like to use, is when there are like limitations. Can God make a rock so big he can't lift it? That kind of thing. Would that refute his infinity? I mean, I know what I would say, but what would you say to that?
Well, I would just, the way that I would respond is I would pose a different question about, can God do this? I would say, can God light bulb blue, red fart, yellow green underwear? Does that make any sense? That's not right. Really a coherent sentence. So to ask, right, can God create a rock so heavy he can't lift it? That's like, yeah, you've strung a ring of, like, you've strung words together that somewhat make sense. Same way I've strung words together. But the point, the principle being, God cannot do anything which is irrational or illogical. Now, God can do things that are beyond our understanding or beyond our comprehension that we have a hard time reasoning to, and that we have to assent to by faith, for example, the Trinity. But even when you look at something like the Trinity itself is not a contradiction in terms. It's the fact that there are three persons sharing the same essence who are still distinct persons who we distinguish by their relations. It still makes sense. The thing is that it is something you can't get to without special revelation. You can't look at the created order around you and say, God is Trinity. You have to have him reveal himself to you. So that's just, yeah. You are not at all saying that, oh, God can't do this. Therefore God is not infinite. No, obviously God cannot contradict himself, because if God contradicted himself, God would cease to be. And if God ceased to be, everything in reality would cease to be. There'd be pure nothingness, which is obviously not the case.
Yeah, no, that was good, man. Are you taking systematic theology and going over some of these things right now?
Not at the moment, no. I mean, I have an intro to pastoral and theological studies class, but that's kind of like more of the baseline stuff. We haven't really dug too deep in there yet. Gotcha. So yeah, this is just cool. Me being a spurg. So
yeah. Well, you articulate it well, and that's something that I've encountered many times on college campuses. Whether it's that example or another example meant to try to pose some kind of attribute of God against itself. And it's a fun, you know, like the answer is no. And that's what I usually say, just like, no, he can't engage in logical contradictions, because
yeah,
that's part of his attributes is logic. Uh-huh. And so you're asking him to not be God at that point. And so his infinity, I mean, he's also, He is logical. There's no contradiction within him, and there isn't within our own hearts, but not within him, either morally or logically or any other way. So,
I mean, it's almost like asking, can God cease to exist? Oh, you say God can't cease to exist. Right, you're limiting God. And it's like, no, like everyone understands that to ask if God can make himself cease to exist is a contradiction. It would just prove, if an atheist said that and someone said, oh, of course God can, that would just prove atheism in a sense. But I mean, that's obviously ridiculous. It's obviously silly. And even atheists know not to ask a dumb question like that, because they could put the piece together. So they should also be able to recognize that to say, can God create a rock so big he can't lift it, is just a contradiction in terms.
You know, speaking of atheists, I saw a clip this morning of Richard Dawkins on with Jordan Peterson.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've ever watched, I guess they did an interview. I don't know if it was recent, but they're asking about the historical Jesus, and Jordan Peterson is like dancing around the whole thing. He can't tell you whether or not Jesus actually rose from the dead. And Richard Dawkins is like on the scientific wavelength of like, we have to have empirical proof of this. It was kind of hard to watch. I'm not going to lie. It was a little hard. I was like, come on, Jordan, come on.
Well, because he's such a smart guy, but he's too smart for his own good in some ways. And it's like, I don't know. I never really jumped on the Jordan Peterson train. Like a lot of, I know a lot of people that have, like, I never really got on it. I've seen enough clips of him to know like, yeah, this guy is interesting. And you just wish they'd make the jump already. I do know that his wife converted to Roman Catholicism. So it's like, well, someone close to him is accepting, you know, the Christian God. So we just need to get him to make that step. And then for the final step, we just need them to become Protestant. So
I think his daughter might be Protestant. I'm not sure if she's Catholic or evangelical of some variety. I was trying to figure that out a few weeks ago because I was writing something.
Yeah, I don't know. She may be Catholic or Orthodox. That's like the trendy online right wing thing to do right now. So she's probably that.
Are we not trendy cool right wing? Is that what you're saying?
No, because we don't need to be trendy or right wing. Or no, we do need to be right wing. We don't need to be trendy.
Right, Right. All right. So we're going to talk about this article. There's so many thoughts that I could share, but I guess there's two ways we can go about this. We can either read it, go through it, or you've already read it and I've skimmed it, and we can just talk about the major points in it, which is, I kind of favor that. Mm-hmm. Let me just show everyone the article. Yeah. And I should probably mention, this podcast is sponsored by TruthScript. If you want to support the podcast, you can make a 501. It is a 501c3. You can make a tax deductible donation. You just scroll to the bottom where it says donate. You can also contribute to TruthScript. There's a lot of great articles. I'm actually really impressed with how I think it, my brother, and there's a whole team he's got that will edit these things, and they're just doing a good job. But the one that was posted on October 17th is entitled "Are Christian Nationalists the Woke Right?" by JJ Eisenbaum. And JJ, I'm wondering if this is his first article, because I don't recognize. Yeah, it is. It's his first article. And I think this is pretty cool, Matthew. So JJ, it says in his bio, is a janitor and a junk hauler by day and a mathematics tutor by night. Now, what a combination. And anyway, just, the rest is pretty standard general stuff. But I thought that was kind of interesting. Some of the smartest people I've met are blue collar guys.
Yeah.
But this is the article. And yeah, let's just start talking about some of, maybe we should set the groundwork first. The term woke right, I don't know of a lot of people who use that. James Lindsay is probably the most prominent figure who uses that online. And if you don't know who James Lindsay is, he was part, what is his claim to fame? I think that he was part of this kind of hoax with two other professors, where they had really, it's kind of funny, they had really showed how vacuous the social justice left is. This is a few years ago, when they submitted to these leftist journals these articles that were ridiculous, like rape culture at dog parks. And they did one where they rewrote Mein Kampf and they just switched out some few words, and it was, they were accepted. And so James Lindsay, since then has been involved. He's from the left more, but in fact, he told me that at a conference. He said, I'm a liberal. We were at CPAC. He's like, I'm not sure what I'm doing here. But that was 2020. Since then, he has found a place in Charlie Kirk's organization, and that's how you might know him. So that's where you hear the term. I'm going to have to have you take over, Matthew. My sickness is creeping up on me here. So the term woke right, what does it mean?
Yeah, woke right. So I've begun to see this sort of pop up in about the past almost yearish, I'd like to say, maybe 8 months to a year. And basically what it seems to be trying to do is conceptualize both Christian nationalist and people on the more dissident right as basically they are, you know, they accept this woke framework that the left has set up, but they just simply inverse certain things. And so there's like this idea of victim complex. There's this idea of race and ethnicity really do matter and play a part in society. And so because people on the dissident right and Christian nationalist right will think in certain categories which fall outside the standard boundaries of like classical liberal orthodoxy. When I say classical liberal, I don't actually mean the classical liberalism of the founding. I think that those guys, you know, to use like online lingo, they were a lot more based or keyed than we like to give them credit for. There's no sense in which their classical liberalism is anything like the, like Dave Rubin's classical liberalism or something like that. But basically, if you don't accept those premises and you think in more early modern, even pre-modern terms, you're seen as basically accepting a critical theory framework, which is something that only libtards do. That only woke people do, and therefore you are now woke, right? And so that's the way they kind of try and frame it. So they may look at circles of the online right that basically say they like to talk about, you know, like they'll repost like these like anti-Semitic memes about like the JQ or something like that. And they'll be like, see, this is just like critical theory, but they're just reversing white people for Jewish people or something like that. And so yeah. Then they'll take that framework and be like, because all the dissident right and Christian right likes to, you know, evaluate groups and talk about identity and things like that, they're there for participating in this sort of thing as well. So it's pretty silly though. Like, I mean, I get where they're coming from and why they do it, but I just think that it's overly simplistic, and you're basically just trying to uphold like the post-war, post you know, civil rights movement, like you're trying to uphold that consensus by beating the left and then looking to the right and being like, you're just like this, and trying to use the same hammer. So that's kind of how I view it.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary of it. I've seen some people are putting in the chat. Neil Shenvey online uses it. I think Joel Berry from Clear Truth Media uses it.
Mm-hmm.
So these are less prominent names, but James Lindsay is probably the most prominent. And it's kind of convenient in a way. I'm not saying that all these guys use it for this purpose, but I could see it being used for this purpose to say, hey, look at me. I'm reasonable. I'm moderate. I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
Here I'm standing in the middle, and then on my right side is this ditch. On my left side is this ditch. They're both woke. I'm not. And I pointed out before that liberalism itself, and again, everything you just said about liberalism itself, though, this commitment to the greatest amount of personal freedom, participation in markets, the greatest, well, we're seeing it right now with the election, unbridled sexual constraints, you know, lack of constraints so that you can not have the punishment of having a child. I mean, that's really the result of liberalism right there. Diversity being our strength, culture and ethnicity and these other things, religion not being important. We can have, share a society as long as we're individuals, right? That's the kind of liberalism I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. That has its own heroes and villains, right? They look at the quote unquote woke people, whether they want to say it's woke right or woke left, and they create a hierarchy. It's inescapable. You're going to have to say there's these forces out there that threaten us, essentially. And so so what are some of the reasons that, because you've made the argument, and I see, look, there's a disparity. Jewish people, let's say, have more money than white people, therefore they're oppressors. And right-wing people are, you know, more aware of that kind of thing than left-wing. Actually, I don't even know if that's true, to be quite honest, because
I don't know if that's people true either, because you know, you see a lot of Free Palestine people, JQ, posting too.
I know. I'm going to say it's mostly the left like obsessed with that. So, but yeah,
but maybe they can use that as an argument for where woke right and woke left kind of intersect. So you know, I guess we're helping them with their thesis.
Yeah, horseshoe theory.
Yeah.
All right. So whether it's that or I'm trying to think, like, what are the other things they bring up to say that you're just, I've seen the accusation that woke right is standpoint theory, just like social justice and woke left is, because we think that certain things are situational. So for example, let's take something like gun rights or welfare, or I don't know, you know, different social policies. And in certain circumstances, we will say, I'm saying we, because I'm including ourselves, because we'll probably get called this because we're conservative. And we're more conservative than James Lindsay, who's a liberal.
Yeah.
We'll say something like, hey, there's going to be different restrictions in areas where you, like, there's less responsibility. They're going to need more, a heavy hand of the government more. They're going to need a stronger police force, for example. You know, there's things suitable for that environment that aren't suitable for other environments. And they'll turn around and say, that's standpoint theory. You're saying that some groups have different truths than other groups, which we're not saying, but that's what they'll say. So those are can you think of anything else that makes them draw parallels here?
Well, yeah, no, I think another is kind of bit going off of what you said with like standpoint epistemology, but I would say that on the more what they would call woke right, there's a sense in which like classical conservatism, especially as seen within paleoconservatism, is incredibly particularist in the way in which they view government and the way in which they view like customs and cultures of different peoples. And so they're very particularist in that different people, different customs, different cultures have these different things that will necessarily change how they may be governed or something like that. And so what that may lead some people to do is they'll say that's just like standpoint epistemology, because you don't have like this more universalist framework of politics or of human. So they may say you don't even have a universalist framework of human nature, basically, because all people are the blank slate. But in reality, it's not woke to acknowledge that, because it's the classical understanding, especially if you're like, you know, a lot of our audience, I assume, is more in the Reformed tradition. If you read someone like Johannes Althusius, if you read Franciscus Junius, if you read Calvin, if you read Vermigli, if you read anything they have to say about politics, something they always acknowledge is that different peoples behave differently. Different forms of government that among the civil magistracy are permissible to do based off the character, customs, and culture of the people. And that's why different laws are instituted in different places and different regions. And if you really want a very succinct picture of this, I would highly recommend reading not Johannes Althusius, but read him too. But Franciscus Junius's The Mosaic Polity. But I think that's something that's very important is understanding particularism. But I think that a lot of these more like classical liberal, again, classical liberal in quotes, what a lot of these guys will think is that particularism is standpoint epistemology, when it's not, because particularists still acknowledge that there is a universal truth, which all things like have to adhere with, but that there are distinctions, there are differences within life, which actually have implications for how you do politics. When it seems that a lot of the more liberal people who have a more universalist understanding of things, I mean, it's the reason why the people that wanted democracy in Iraq, they're like, oh, it'll work there because they're humans just like us. And it's like, yeah, they are humans just like us, but they also have an entirely different history than us. They're used to different things than us. So, yeah, that's the end of my spiel there, at least. John, I think you're muted.
Ha, there. Can you hear me now?
I can, yes.
Jesus acknowledges this, too, because he talks about the fact that it was because of the hardness of heart that God implemented these regulatory rules concerning divorce in the Old Testament time. And even when the disciples are taking grain, he says that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, admitting that there are these situational things that direct certain laws, in other words. And it doesn't mean that there aren't universal laws. There certainly are, but they will manifest themselves differently sometimes in different environments. That's all it is. That's all. Yeah. At least I see. So, with that said, I don't think they're going to call Jesus woke right or woke in any sense. You'd have to go back and look at all the Greco-Roman philosophers. Everyone's woke under this paradigm because they're talking about things that are pretty much inescapable. That if you want to engage in the political, I guess you're woke. So the three things, maybe to shift gears here, the three things that I noted, and you can add to this, that are differences between the woke right and then the woke. The woke right, or I shouldn't even say the woke right, because I don't want to use that term in a positive way. I don't think we should use that term at all. But if you want to say conservatives to the right of James Lindsay are woke right, they have these differences. They are not interested in ripping down hierarchies. That's pretty much the core of the woke movement, is realizing that there's these hierarchies that need to be ripped down. And I realize someone might say, well, you know, conservatives want to take care of the deep state and that kind of thing. Well, that's true. Like, you know, we do want to get rid of the deep state, but we see that as an artificial corruption of hierarchy, that it was because of the destruction of intermediary forces, voluntary associations, weakening of the family, labor relationships, all these kinds of things. Because of that, the state ends up growing. And so we want to actually restore hierarchy. We see this as something good and natural. And so we're positive about hierarchy when we talk about it. The left and the woke, right? They don't want to admit that they engage in hierarchy at all, because they're totally egalitarian and against hierarchy. They're always about extending equality, where social equality in wherever they go and all their policies. So this is a key difference. The right is interested in a ordered freedom that includes hierarchy for positive good. the left, the woke, they don't, that's why they're destructive. They don't want any of that. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. Another thing, I'll just say these two things real briefly, is the left engages in a totalizing critique, meaning we just talked about universality, but they will, like, feminists think everything's related to feminism. So critical race theorists see racism everywhere. There's no neutral activities. The quote unquote woke right, or in other words, conservatives, we don't do those totalizing critiques. We don't reduce reality to some very simple precept that is the key to explaining the whole. And we could talk about that more. That's ideology, really. And then the other thing, this is a really, I think, basic thing, is we're not, our critiques are not based on outright lies. The woke, that was one of the main issues with them. There's racism, there's this, there's that. But then they couldn't back any of it up. Oftentimes it was just, you know, the police are racist. Why? Well, if you have to ask the question, you're the one that's an oppressor. I mean, it did not value truth at all. And that does not describe the right at all. So those are three things. And those are major things that would distinguish conservatives from quote unquote woke people. What are some other things, Matthew? Or are there other things that you can think of?
Are there other things that they would use that would, like, differentiate who are called the woke right from the
woke? Yeah, why is this a ridiculous canard? In other words?
Yeah. I think a good point that you brought up that I wanted to expand on is the point on hierarchy. As you said, the woke are, at least in theory, not so much in their practice, but in theory, they are, like, explicitly egalitarian. I think in practice, and a lot of them by fantasy, they really do kind of just want to, like, basically enslave white people. I'm not really, you know, I think that's actually the case. But no, in theory, they're egalitarian, and they see these hierarchies and institutions, and they seek to tear them down. Whereas anyone, to use a phrase you use, which is a bit longer than woke right, but I like it a lot, anyone to the right of James Lindsay, the way in which they view it is they are right wing. They are more conservative. Therefore, hierarchy is something good because there is a created order and important. Sorry, there are squirrels running, distracting me. Important to the created order is the fact that there is a hierarchy instituted. I mean, look at Genesis 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God at the top. And then as he creates, there's hierarchies. Man over the beast. Then husband over wife. Then husband and wife over children. I mean, hierarchy is literally fundamental to the classical system. And, you know, even when you look at non-Christian sources like Plato, Aristotle, all these people, hierarchy. Those of us to the right of James Lindsay, what we seek to do is to actually not tear down these hierarchies and just leave them down. No, if there's anything like the deep state, you want to get in there and remove it, but for the sake of true good godly hierarchy. So that is something that we do uphold. And then, you know, when people, like, hurl accusations of, like, oh, patriarchy, yada yada yada, and it's just like, you know, that's not coming from nowhere, because we do believe in a sense that there is, like, hierarchical systems in nature, and that is what characterizes being right wing, is recognizing that hierarchy is something good. Now, are there sometimes hierarchies where justice is not always there and it can be abused? Absolutely. I mean, look at husbands who abuse their wives. Look at states that become tyrannical and enslave their citizens. That kind of thing happens all the time. But it doesn't mean that it is intrinsically bad. Hierarchies going corrupt is not necessarily mean that it's bad. But yeah, that's, like, the only really thing, the big thing that I thought of from your list of what to add on, was just to kind of expand on the fact that, like, our goals are totally different. You may want to claim that, oh, you guys have the same framework, but say that I grant the premise that we do. I'm woke. Okay. Look, guys, I'm a critical theorist. This is how I view the world. Say I were to grant that, my goals are still entirely different. The way in which I seek to, like, use this is entirely different. And I think that's what a lot of them don't want to acknowledge.
Yeah. And some of the points that the article makes are that this term, so getting into the etymology of it, this term woke, this was created by leftists. And they wanted to imply that people who did not see the abuses and oppressions were asleep still. So it was an insult against those who weren't woke. Now, of course, they're running from it, but that's why it was originally created. And there is an element of authorial intent here. Like, they used it for their issues, and it was a kind of a smear tactic, I guess you could say. And the term has been somewhat transformed. It's been co-opted by the right as a now a smear term against them. And he makes the case that this is somewhat vacuous as far as the term itself. It never, like, in and of itself had a, I mean, it's not even good grammar. It didn't have, like, a comprehensive definition. It was a rhetorical device used to propel a social justice movement. And we've had those for centuries. So this isn't, like, a brand new thing, but the use of the term was supposed to be providing support for the latest iteration of Black Lives Matter, essentially, and maybe to a lesser extent, the Me Too movement. So, and the LGBT, I should put that in there too. So it's attached to these movements, not to right-leaning movements. That's where it arose from. That's where it was used. And then to just take it from that context and apply it to other contexts, it makes the term even... It increases, this is what he's basically trying to argue, that it makes it a devil word. It increases the negativity applied to it. So you hear it and you're like, that's bad. But it makes the term itself less meaningful. You don't know what it means anymore. You just know it's really bad. It's like calling someone a fascist. What is that? You know, people use it in so many different ways. We hardly know, mm-hmm. You know, so we shouldn't use the term is the argument that, is made in this particular article by J.J. Eisenbaum.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it would be prudent to explore the ideological angle just a little bit too, because to me, this is the hardest concept to grasp in this, but I put a tweet out there the other day. I said something like, you can't have conservatism and ideology, or you can't be an ideologue and say you're a conservative, something like that. And there was a little bit of discussion because I think some people want to know what I mean by an ideologue. And I mean the woke right term is, I think, crafted by people who are looking at things ideologically. Liberals tend to be ideological. The woke social justice movement is obviously ideological. And really what that means is that their metaphysic narrows all of earthly experience. Everything that we experience, whether it's sense perception or even in the spiritual world, everything we experience gets truncated into this very narrow channel where we can evaluate it with using these very simple precepts. We don't have to know much. All we have to, you know, it's like libertarianism is basically an ideology, or at least it can be. Mm-hmm. It can function that way because it's just like, well, the non-aggression principle and the free market, and that's it. Very simple. Those two things hold the key to, at least in certain versions of libertarianism, they hold the key to all kinds of problems. And most problems are quite more complex than that. Like, it's not, you're not going to find all the answers in those two principles. And this is a very enlightenment driven modernist kind of way understanding. It's a way to try to scientifically kind of like at the root level, find what are the laws at the base in the most simplistic form that govern everything. And if we can just break the code, then we can figure out the key to life. And that's how the woke people operate. You've noticed probably if you interact with them, it's hard to have a conversation outside of this very narrow window that they're familiar with, because oftentimes they're activists and their skills and their experiences and everything fit within this very narrow mold. And I don't see that with conservatives. That's not how conservatives operate. Conservatives generally are a lot more holistic in the way that they look at life. And traditions, conservatives inherently like to conserve good and valuable traditions. Traditions are not compatible with ideology, really. Ideology is a very abstract, top-down, cerebral thing that you impose on everything. Traditions are very organic, bottom-up, develop over time, conserve wisdom, and the wisdom is displayed through experience. So in general, conservatives are going to be much more wanting to look at experience and what's worked in the past, what are the How do humans usually behave? Maybe we should adjust ourselves and our policies to that, because we can't live in a perfect world. So, I mean, that's fundamentally, I think, at the root of a lot of this is humans aren't necessarily good. They have their flaws. And when humans act in certain ways, we have to adjust our policies and that kind of thing. Whereas the left has a one size fits all ideological top down, no mercy, damned the consequences kind of way of approaching these political problems. That's hard to grasp. And I admit, maybe Matthew, you can do a better job explaining this, because I've struggled with this for years, because I think by default, we're all kind of ideologues. That's the education system we're in. That's the entertainment media we're in, constantly drumming slogans into our minds that reinforce ideologies, namely liberalism. You know, I don't know if you're younger than me, but even in a homeschool family, I was exposed to diversity is our strength. You can be anything you want to be. You should, my body, my choice, all of those things. That was in the water I swim in, just because it was so pervasive. Those are all ideological principles, really. So that's, I think, a key difference between social justice, wokeness, quote unquote, and then conservatism. And they're not compatible. And the people who want to make them compatible have to basically truncate conservatism into a cartoon. They have to make it an ideology. They have to change it in order to try to make this comparison work.
Yeah, that's a good analysis, John. Something that I had also thought of when you were going through like how conservatism and the woke on the left, the woke left, how that's kind of incompatible with anything, you know, is I think something which is important is that whenever you look at people on the right versus people on the left, especially on like the woke people on the left, they're always very utopian. And when you describe conservatism, and here's the thing about utopianism, is that utopianism springs from like particular ideologies. Not every ideology is utopian, but when you're talking about ideologies on the left, nearly all the time, they're incredibly utopian. And I think that's part of what distinguishes them from conservatives, is that they seek to, there's not like a perfect, like final eschatological, society that conservatives think they can just bring about by preserving their traditions and cultures and customs. It's always an acknowledgement that conservatism can never be passive. And part of the reason why so many people on the right today don't want to call themselves conservative is because there's this understanding. It's like, what is there even to conserve anymore? People from like 60, 50 years ago, just gave up everything, basically. There's nothing left to conserve. And that's because conservatism itself is not a passive, it's not a passive thing you just do. You have to actively uphold your traditions. You have to actively uphold your customs and things like that. And there's this realization that if you don't do that, if you're not actively working like that, it's going to go away. And we see that happening now. Whereas it seems like, you know, when you think of the woke, or you think of, you know, we want to go back farther, communism, it's always utopian. It's like, once we finally get this, it's like peace. It's all there now. Now we finally have it. And I just, I don't see that with people on the right.
That's an excellent point. I'd even think of that. And I think worth contemplating the utopian aspect here. Let's do a few questions and then we'll wrap up the show. So some questions, let's see here. I've started a few of them. If you have questions, get them in now. Stormy Squad, anyone using the term thinks in-group preference is woke? That's a good point. Yeah. So you're not supposed to have any attachments to your people, your region. I would argue, for the logic to hold, even your families. That's the liberal mindset, is you are an individual and your allegiance is essentially to the world. It's to yourself. But beyond that, you know, there's yourself and there's the world, and you engage in these different contracts that do not violate your will and your choice. That's how liberals look at the way someone goes through life.
I would say they say that for one particular group of people, and everybody else can have their in-group preferences, can have their culture, can have all that. they only say that for one group, and
yeah,
everyone yeah. watching and listening, and you know who this group is. So
yeah, well, yeah, yeah, white people, men, yeah. and Christians primarily are the exceptions here, but yeah, I would agree. The thing is, human nature, you can't fight it. We're gonna have in-group preferences. You're gonna favor. I have a daughter right now. I'm gonna favor my daughter over other people's daughters. When it doesn't mean I'm going to fudge, you know, I'm not going to violate moral principles to cheat for my daughter or something like that. You know, in the example of like, you know, if I was a coach on the baseball team, but my resources, my time, my allegiance is to her. So that's incompatible. That actually automatically creates a hierarchy of some kind. You can't not have it do that. And it's going to, there are going to be these preferences yeah. anyway. Liberals on the left demand equality of outcome. Liberals on the right demand equality of opportunity. Equality is the highest good, says Matt Borish. You want to respond to that?
Can you pull it back up? It was something about equality of opportunity.
I just lost it. Yeah, I think I remember what he said, though. It was that yeah. liberals, equality of outcome, conservatives, equality yeah. of opportunity, both are making equality their highest good.
Yeah, I mean, I myself, like, I actually don't mind equality of opportunity in some particular circumstances, but I think on the right, the reason why you have to be careful is because that can kind of open up like crazy streams of like mass immigration, basically, where it's like, oh, if you universalize equality of opportunity, then that like can almost be like, therefore we have to open the world up, we have to open ourselves up to the world. But I get his point that he's making, but I think in certain circumstances, equality of opportunity is just a system being just and giving people that which is their due, which is the opportunity to do particular things.
I think what you're describing is equality before the law. And I would agree with you on that, that mm-hmm. yeah, that's just, if someone murders someone or breaks the rules, they get a just punishment no matter who they are. If they should be rewarded, they'll be rewarded no matter who they are. But yeah, I don't like the even framing of equality of opportunity just because of what you just said. And people are going to naturally start off at different points. Nothing is equal when it comes to humans. Mm-hmm. Some people have better minds, better bodies, or you know, certain aspects of their minds or bodies IQ. Are better. What's that?
IQ, you know, IQ,
or like
yeah, the body that are disabled, you know, like God gives people differing native gifts. Why? I don't know. It's me, yeah. but he does.
And then someone might inherit more money from their parents. They may be mm-hmm. set, you know, that, you can't, if you want to try to make that all equal, you're going to find that it's not possible. Tom says, the key definitional distinction of the term woke right is the appeal to post-liberal systemic narratives and eventual appeals to authoritarianism.
Mm.
I'm trying to digest that in my head right now, my sick mind.
No, it's a, yeah, it's a very good point, though. I'm in agreement.
Yeah. Let's go to the next one. Diane says, what about the tendency towards elitism? Yeah, the woke people definitely, they don't like to admit that they're creating hierarchies because they're always, I mean, even Kamala Harris is, you know, what does she say with every question she's asked every single time? I'm from a working class family. Every time.
Yeah, yeah.
She's part of the biggest elite cabal in this country. The most influential group of people in this country, Kamala Harris is part of it.
She's running for president. Like, she's vice president right now. Yeah, I don't have a problem with elitism. I just think that we have really bad elites who are incompetent. I just want good ones. So
I love Trump because he's like, are we making lots of money? I have lots of money. Like, he's just so...
he's real, you know? He's just a real guy.
John Carter, the woke don't actually believe in equality. They don't just want to destroy hierarchy. They want to invert all natural hierarchies. That's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
It is an inversion. You know, they want to. That's the intersectionality thing.
Yeah.
Lindsay fan here. I'm going to let Matthew do this. What does that term mean to the right of Lindsay? He's a classic liberal, and which I checked is fairly conservative. So our classic liberal is conservative.
Yeah, well, classical liberals were fairly somewhat conservative in certain conceptions of it, if I recall correctly. But the way that we talk about this is that Lindsay, I mean, let's think about it. The guy is pro-gay marriage. The guy is okay with abortion. So just to give those few examples, I don't really think that that's very I don't think those are right wing positions. That's just me, though. Gay marriage and abortion, I think that we can safely say he is on the left. Now, he may call himself a classical liberal. For that reason, he may say, oh, well, see, I want all people to be, you know, I want everyone to be able to have their own right to do because I champion freedom because I'm a liberal. But the thing is if you actually track conservatism and liberalism, people on the right in this country for the past, like, however long, very long until quite recently, we're always against homosexual marriage. We're always against abortion. I mean, that's just, that's how we have, I mean, it can be a little bit too simplistic to be like, that's left, that's right. But just based off how the left, right wing, you know, functions in our country, that's how it goes, which is why we say to the right of James Lindsay, because some of us do believe that gay marriage is not actually marriage and that it's actually an abomination. Some of us actually do think that abortion is a wicked, evil thing and is not about bodily autonomy. Some of us do think that having true freedom needs to happen within the confines of a virtuous society, which sometimes a state needs to help bring about. Like, I don't mind saying that. Even, I mean, the founders, all look at all the states that had blasphemy laws. Are you telling me they, they weren't real classical liberals? Yes, they were. It was the founders. So that's what we mean when we say to the right of James Lindsay. We're in the classical conservative tradition of the United States. Be it whether you want to be a Federalist or an Anti-Federalist, that they were agreed in a lot of these points back then. So that's all I'll say for that one.
Yeah, I just keep remembering in my mind at 2020, James Lindsay told me, I saw him right there, right in front of me. He said, I don't feel like, he said he felt like a fish out of water. He didn't feel like he belonged at CPAC. CPAC, by the way, not that conservative.
It's normie stuff, dude.
Yeah, you have your atheist for liberty, your tranny for Trump. I mean, it was just, I was kind of shocked. I was like, this doesn't seem conservative at all. But he was kind of like, I'm a liberal. I don't belong here. So if that gives you any idea. Yeah. I do think that when people, because Glenn Beck's been doing this for years, they start on this classical liberal thing. Oftentimes, it really, I don't know if it veils it, but it puts in intellectually respectable terms a commitment to pluralism generally and religious pluralism included in that. They'll say that they want the free market and people to basically be able to make their own choices. That's the classical liberal side of it. But like, they just see people. There's like people, and then there's the government. There's and you operate in life by entering these consensual bounds with your all powerful choice. It's not conservatism sees people as born into families, communities with obligations already there. When I have a daughter who was just born a few months ago, she didn't have a choice in where she was born. She was born into a particular family, into a particular community with all the benefits that those things give to her. And then she'll develop a fondness for those things. And those attachments will grow stronger as she gets older, if things go correctly. And she will see herself as having a responsibility to upkeep the things that were passed down to her. That's a conservative view. Whether you want to say modern liberal or classic liberal, I'm saying the people that I know who use the term classic liberal generally want to erode that. Whether they know they're doing it or not, they just look at these individuals. They're not even people anymore. They're individuals that engage in a market and make choices. And, you're not supposed to question the decisions of the market because that's the will of the people. Democracy, of course, is all caught up in this as you know, the superior form of government because of this. And we're actually out of time. So we got to kind of land the plane here. But
yeah,
hopefully that helps at least with James Lindsay a little bit. All right. So next. We haven't planned what we're going to talk about next week, but we are planning to be here next week, next Tuesday. We got to talk about, I think I will be here actually. So yeah, I was going to say, I think it's the week after that I won't be, but I will be here next Tuesday. So you can look forward to seeing Matt and I again. And if you want to follow Matt on what's your Twitter handle, Matt?
If I'm remembering rightly, it's _ Matthew Pearson, but I can check that for you really quick, actually.
You don't know your Twitter handle?
Yeah, no, it's _ Matthew Pearson. No, I always forget. Yeah, but that's what it is. Because my Twitter handle, my Instagram handle are different for some reason or the other.
All right. And you can check out my stuff at johnharrispodcast.com. Go to truthscript.com for more engaging articles. God bless and good night.
Take care, y'all.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.